Are you looking to keep up with key trends in the marketplace? Are you striving to maintain your competitive edge at work? Looking for a career change but unsure about your next move? The Skillsharp podcast is here to help you. Join industry insiders Brian, Todd, and Mike, who will guide you through new strategies for career success.
Don't forget to visit our website at skill-sharp.com to subscribe and gain access to all of our content. Stay sharp. Welcome to part two of our interview with Richard Harrigan and LeBrian Robinson, co-owners of the Tri-State Warriors. Enjoy.
Currently, I feel like women's professional football is one of the biggest sports or leagues that no one knows about. Tell me if I'm right, but you know, the Women's Football Alliance has 52 plus teams in four divisions. There's, you know, back to the AFL NFL mindset where there were two leagues that didn't play one another. I believe there's another league.
Yes.
And they're pretty large as well. What league is that?
The WNFC.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So based on the WFA or Women's Football Alliance, you know, why did you all choose to work within this league? Tell us a little bit of the history of it.
Well, because I brought LB into this, I guess I have to do the history part, right, LB?
Right.
So the WFA was at once called the IWFL, which started over 20 something years ago. The problem then that there were too many small markets. There were still a lot of teams, but there were small markets. And the big markets, Boston, Chicago, New York, Atlanta, LA, Dallas, they were just competing at a higher level and always being the, and they were always the more successful teams. So Lisa King and her husband, Lisa King is the commissioner of the now, WFA, which was formed in 2009. And that started out to be just the top, let's say 10 to 15 teams in the country. We're going to be in that WFA so that the smaller markets would thrive in the IWFL and not have to worry about being destroyed in games by score wise. And it could be more competitive for them. That's the word I'm looking for. So they wanted to divide the leagues then into so that they can be more competitive. Well, the IWFL eventually folded because the teams were getting better and they all joined the WFA. And the WFA got bigger and it's been around since 2009, like I said. There's still small markets, but they divided it into divisions like Brian had mentioned earlier, to make it competitive on your level. What branched out from that is some of the players from the WFA, some of the older players, wanted to try to get the league more exposure because we still weren't getting exposure. Like Brian had mentioned, why there's really it's really like an unknown. But with the addition of live streaming, YouTube, and all these, do-it-yourself, videos. You could now bring women's football to people's homes through their computers or through their devices. And this is where the WNFC really flourished as they started out. They started out with some very bright women who created this new league. But they've only been around about 3 or 4 years, so they're still moving forward too, but they've taken advantage of all the new technology and all the exciting new market strategies that are out there now that most people had to go to college to get this information, right? But now you can get it here on your computer, and they really excelled on that. But they still only have about maybe 15 teams, maybe I think, I don't know if it's even that many. So they're still growing too. So just like somebody comes out with a new toy or a new car, you know, they're the new kids on the block. But the WFA has stayed strong all the way through. Now, I have always been an advocate of bringing any two leagues together, like you were saying about the AFL and the NFL. We really need to do that. But right now, I'm a new owner, so maybe LB and I as owners will have a voice in that maybe down the road, because we were just coaching before. But we went with the WFA because strategically or geographically, they really needed or wanted a team in New Jersey because they didn't have a team in Pennsylvania except for Pittsburgh. And they had a team in New York, but there was nothing in between. So the WFA was a good choice for us. And so far, so good.
You know how
with all of that,
you know how things always converge. So I was listening to NPR recently in the past month, and there was a book written called Hail Mary. And I don't know if you guys heard about it, but it was the chronicles of the highs and lows of the National Women's Football League that was launched in 1967. And they said it was initially not a kind of exhibition, kind of Harlem Globetrotters type of mindset to where it was almost like a traveling team that would just kind of promote the sport. But to think that there's this historical run and evolution into what the WFA is really makes a lot of sense, because operationally, the WFA runs just like the NFL, which I love about it. And I think even the launch of the Tri-State Warriors and your franchise, the fact that you're in the trial stage, mini camps begin in January, you guys are looking for the best 40, you know, women or, you know, 45 that you could find. You're going to be based in New Brunswick, New Jersey, connected to Rutgers. I mean, there's just so many great parallels that I see. So, I mean, I guess what does being a franchise owner mean to you? You know what, and then obviously to be able to bring it home is another thing. So tell us your thoughts on that.
All right, LB, I'm gonna let you take this one.
For me, it means that we're controlling our own narrative. We get to fine tune a lot of the things that we saw were issues on our journey to ownership. It also gives us the opportunity to put our brand of football into play and our mindset and our concept. So that's what it is for me.
And for me, right along the same lines as what LB just put out. Having children, having three sons, I believe in legacy. I believe in building, generational wealth, and wealth meaning not just financial wealth, quality life, the quality of life. What you put into life is what you get out of it. Controlling your own narrative is so important, especially nowadays. Empowering women, empowering Black and Brown people to do for themselves, to move the standard without shaking the standard, without making it your own, and share it with others. Like I said, there was a need in New Jersey, and that allowed us this opportunity. So what it means to me is you're building a legacy that will impact the masses. That's what it means to me.
And speaking of legacy, where does the league go next? What frontiers are you going to try to dominate in the coming future?
Well, the next goal and the goal for a while is to get these women paid to play. That's the goal. That is the goal. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
So the exposure is getting a little better, but we need some sort of TV contract. We need some sort of major influx of
investors.
Money. Investors. Yeah. But that's the goal. That's the real goal. Because like I think Michael mentioned earlier, these women have regular jobs. They're raising children. They have families, they have 9-to-5s. We can only practice, if you're lucky, two nights a week in a 2-to-3-hour window each night, because the games are on Saturdays. So thank God for, you know, YouTube and Zoom and all these things where we can do stuff off the field and still coach and still get the information relayed to the women. But honestly, that's the goal, to get them to get a paycheck and make this a real professional sport for women. Because right now it's professional for the coaches because we do get paid. Well, now that me and LB are owners, we're paying, but you know, that's the goal is to get them some sort of financial compensation for all their hard work.
We're going to produce a 30 for 30 for you guys. That's going to be on ESPN. Then we'll get you exposure there.
Excellent. There you go.
Because that goes back to the question when you were saying what gets them motivated to play. If you happen to pay to play a sport that you love, you're already motivated.
Right.
That's true.
LB, you're absolutely correct. And I'm gonna piggyback on that, LB. That's another reason why I've stayed coaching in this league. These women love football. And they're not getting paid for it. And they put a lot of work in. And most of them are the most coachable people I've ever had in my life. You know? Yeah.
They want to learn the game that they love.
Yeah, and they want to master it. And
not just be out there. Yeah.
Right. And just there's no way that I cannot want to be a part of that.
Yeah, one of my former recruiter buddies, she's a quarterback of her team in the league in San Francisco. And every Monday, she's back at work all bruised up and banged up. So. But it's because of the passion that she has. You know, she loves it.
It's really
that love. It's that drive, you know.
Yeah, walking all crooked back to her desk on Monday, Tuesday.
But if you think about it, for the CrossFit crowds, the workout weekend warriors, like you're saying, to a certain extent, nothing to do with sports or football, but just people that love to work out. That's one thing. Then you have the D1, D2, and D3 athletes that are playing various sports that don't necessarily have a professional outlet. Or, you know, the NCAA had a commercial several years ago. Mike, I think we talked about this, where they said 98% of us are going to go pro in something other than sports. And so for the student athletes able to come out into a professional league, you know, and be able to still continue their high level of athleticism, I think is really important. And then two, you guys are open to people with no experience, you know what I mean? That may want to just be on that journey of working out and building camaraderie or, you know, for other reasons. So, I mean, those three entry points are pretty huge. Are you guys communicating that from a standpoint of the tryouts and, you know, what people are hearing once they get to your, to your events when you're selecting players?
Definitely. Yep. Definitely. No doubt. Very important. That's a very important piece.
And that's on the flyer.
Right. And that's on the flyer anyway. Absolutely.
Where I got it from.
that's a question of mine. How do you guys promote the tryouts? Are you going on social media or with the creative economy, getting on, putting out a YouTube or what's that recruiting process like?
Well, you know, being that Brian is on our board of directors and he's also part of our PR media team, I'll let Brian answer that.
Oh, wow. Luckily we got connected to an OTT or, over the top platform that delivers video from whether it be Roku or Amazon TV, but then also from their own site and, called QVision. And Dorinda Angelucci is kind of the executive producer in that space. So she is working directly with the Tri-State Warriors on one, just building media content, number one, just mass elements that can be pushed out on multiple platforms. And then obviously the goal is to storytell. I mean, from the league, the franchise, your coaches, which is this podcast is, you know, a part of that. But then also think about it. All the players have a story. You know, they have motivations on why they got involved. They come from various parts of the community where we could tell those stories. So, yeah, the goal is to leverage. And the other part of the media making is as you're telling your story, you're also learning to tell stories.
Right.
So this becomes a self-fulfilling 360 mic. Your circle, you know, of being able to teach people professionally how to own their story. And that makes hopefully them equipped to tell other people's stories.
And on the back end of that, LB and I really grassroots to, in some ways also. Him and I, right, LB? I know you're going to say that.
Yeah.
We go, we go door to door.
With the boots on.
We go door to door with flyers. To radio stations, to the different colleges,
I was to at Drew stores, University last night.
Yep,
and left a couple.
And I was down at Rutgers last night talking to the radio station. So we go door to door. Our staff, our coaches, our administration, they all help out. We use the social media platforms all the time. We blast it all over there, and the players that make the team on the tryouts, we get them. Going, you know, this is how it's done. It's really grassroots for the most part, but having the people from QVision there has elevated us to get things out there electronically quicker and to the bigger you know, communication companies that can communicate who we are on a bigger level. Yeah
the bigger platform,
right?
Now, going back to the real estate development side and construction side briefly, you guys mentioned on the building of the franchise that, you know, the legacy part of it and just being able to have it's like an institution that is going to go far beyond, you know, the daily activities that are happening now. I know there's some new technology and some other initiatives that Rasco is involved in. I'd love for you all to share a little bit, what you can share, you know, that doesn't break confidence on or confidentiality about the new disaster resistant developments that you're working on.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To be honest with you, We say new only because it's not part of the everyday conversation in engineering in this country. But the concept has been around since the 70s. Basically, but it's mostly been used in third world countries or overseas, places like India, South America, Africa. Have a lot of issues, right? And Guyana is where we're targeting now, because they have a lot of issues with tsunamis, with the weather, with, you know. So when we, you know, major disasters that come from all the elements, you know, water, fire, you know, all that stuff, and you know, we have. You know, we use a process that tries to make living standards more quality, to give people more quality in their living standards in places where their homes are destroyed because of these issues. Let me give you a quick example why we're focused on Guyana, other than the fact that our other co-partner is from Guyana. They've had a history of homeless issues because the homes are not built with integrity. They're very shabby. Contractors taking advantage of people when they get their land, people not having enough money to finish homes. But then you also have issues with the weather. So they've had to make, people squatters. They have made, Guyana has made squatting legal the last 15 years because there's so many people who are homeless living on the street. So now people can go into like abandoned buildings or broken down places and actually move in and have a plan and have a semi roof over their head. So there's a need for it. And this is happening in a lot of places. So the innovation is to build homes that'll battle the elements, but also sustain longer. And that's with concrete. And not just blocks, not concrete blocks, not bricks, which can be compromised along the way, but in concrete slabs, full slabs, walls, floor, roof, so that they last longer and they can sustain some of the elements. And they're also raised on these things called grade beams to allow flooding, or water to pass under without flooding. So that's one example, but it's really not new. It's only new in its in the common sense of today and how it's being used, but it's been around for a long time.
The cost effect, the cost part of it and the time part is the biggest part because yes. We're constructed, the homes can be constructed in half of the time that they normally would be.
Absolutely. And
So those are pre-constructed concrete slabs that you put vertically, right? I've seen that before.
Right. So there, yeah. We can actually take molds and place molds onto a site. So we don't have to transport and right. Just driving. Right. They could be right on site. And one mold can be used up to 500 times. So that's cost effective. And they can be done in less than a week. You can get a 2-bedroom home, single level, up in less than a week. Then you have to add all the in interior things. But the bottom line is, the other big piece of this is, we go into to a client's country or city or town, and we train unskilled workers for almost a month in how to use this particular technology. So we're also bringing jobs. We're bringing
education
to those areas, and that's and to me that's the most impactful over long term, because now they can eventually own these molds and they can go on their own and they can continue building in their own in their own cities and towns.
You guys are franchising it.
I guess.
You guys are right. Franchising that technology and knowledge. That's incredible.
Literally cookie cuttering it, because yeah. When you're talking yeah. About those tropical regions, it's the growth issues. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the vegetation.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. You can clear it out as much as you can, but it's just so moist down there that stuff is going to grow back.
Right.
You're cutting it down, 4 or 5 times a year. So dropping a deep slab of cement, concrete, and then mm-hmm. building with cement and concrete, that's a great plan.
Absolutely.
Especially when you deal with hurricanes too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We know that those hurricanes will knock wood, make wood like a matchstick. Make yeah. a piece of lumber look like a matchstick. So that's awesome.
Absolutely.
And you guys also have a development in the US market, the boys' home.
Group home, yes.
Group home.
Yes. It's, right now, we're just looking to do boys, but eventually when we get it established, we want to do females as well. What we're doing, we're trying to provide a home for young men from the ages of 8 to 16. And within this home, we're creating a nonprofit business that also acts like, what was it back in the day? I can't think of the word, where you learn the skill, a trade, almost like a trade school. Like within our first business, we're doing a lawn and garden service with that. So the scholars that are coming in will also be learning about lawn and gardening and horticulture. We're hoping to get that up and going. We had the home, But we're in the process of finalizing all the paperwork and all the crossing the T's and dotting the I's. But it's giving young males the opportunity for a fresh start, basically. You know, ones that are in problem within the juvenile system, ones that are in problem in school. You know, what we're looking to do is make it a final destination. So once they leave the group home, they're moving on with their life.
Absolutely. And part of that is to make their transition into society and into the workforce a lot easier. But just like the football piece that we're doing and trying to create a bridge, and that's a great word that you used earlier, Michael, that bridge. We want to put this bridge for these young men so that they can go into society and succeed. Life skills, the things we talked about, preparation, preparing for things, being leaders, you know, the things that LB talked about, being on time, you know, being organized. All these things will transpire in their time in the group home, you know, and we'll bring in the local community business leaders to be a part of that at some point to allow these young men to get the right skills and training, to just to give them a chance. You know, this it's you know, somebody has to do it. That's the way that we look at it. And LB works excellent with young men and young women, and he does an excellent job. So this is an area that I'm not familiar with until I met him, but it's become so easy to follow his footsteps.
I think that's excellent also. And about to open this can of worms. I think that's kind of my job as part of our podcast. I'm the one sometimes, well, we all do, but I'm just going to say it. Boys are different.
Yeah.
And teaching boy, you know what I mean? There's something with that physical, and I'm stereotyping, but there's sometimes a boy he needs to be physical. He needs to run out, get outside, run around, pull a branch off of a tree, do some push-ups. And when he comes back into the classroom, I think it's easier, for lack of a better term, for him to focus if he gets that chance to be physical. Yeah. Unfortunately, some of the public education environment, some of them, the boys don't necessarily have a chance to be boys. And I think that is one of the reasons they end up showing out and doing things that they quote unquote shouldn't be doing, because we're not approaching them as we should as boys.
I'm working with eighth graders now, and you hit it on the head. They have so much untapped energy that when they're in the building, they're just out of control, because that's in their mind, that's their time that they can release it. Instead of having a platform where they're out every day getting to release that.
Absolutely. And that's another reason why we're going to be bringing sports and you know, physical activity into these group homes as well.
Yeah.
I want to double down
on that's an important concept.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the convergence of that environment, that safe space that you're creating, is really important. Just to double down on what Mike is saying, you know, grownups could use that same environment as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of transitioning people that are really struggling right now.
I have to take a walk outside sometime and walk around. So I know exactly what it means.
All of us.
Absolutely. And that's why I believe that, and it's not just sports, it could be anything that would create some type of quote unquote discipline. I think that's important for individuals to use in whatever, you know, walk of life they're using. Because I noticed, I had this conversation with a young man that was working at a rent-a-car firm recently. I found it when I was in the corporate world, it was a lot of complaining by a good number of the employees. They'll just complain about, to me, sound like they're complaining about just about everything. And I know those individuals that come out of the military or that may come out of sports environments, sometimes they may not necessarily like what they're doing, but they don't complain. They just get it done. You know, like I said, those are some of the things that just stuck out to me about Brian and Todd. And I think it was just the sports in their background, among other things, the way they were raised and brought up. You know, they just went ahead and did what they had to do. I mean, you know, at times we're going to sit down and say, you know what, that was a bunch of BS, but you got it done. It's not the time that you're wasting and using complaining about it. You know, you could have just used that to get it done and to move on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, Rasco was created in 2015 as the vision of a wonderful man, Muhammad Insham, who's from Guyana but lives in New York. And he wanted to give back to his home country. And I got the pleasure of meeting him. He's an engineer by trade also, and he's retired. And I met him about 5-6 years ago. And he brought me into a world that, with all my engineering background, I didn't know that even existed. And that was this new technology to build homes in this fashion. And so basically, you know, Rasco, he and I pushed out to take this housing technology and introduced it, a concept to a developing world that pushes local market and demands towards a more sustainable and resource efficient development in order to save on costs and obtain affordable access to rental property and home ownership. You know, we try to introduce a proven technology that has slowly evolved away from traditional inefficient building methods, you know, like, you know, the regular brick and mortar and wood. So we bring to the market a manufactured prefab building elements that outperforms the security of brick and mortar, like I said, while using significantly fewer materials needed to construct even an apartment complex. And this technology is called Wafflecrete, which helps manufacture these molds, which for concrete panels of floors, walls, and roofs. And the most important piece, like LB mentioned earlier, it will increase durability and sustainability while lowering labor and material costs by nearly 60%, all the while creating local employment. So that's the overall perspective from Rasco.
Restore Group Homes came about, I guess, like all things. I've worked with young juveniles ever since coming out of professional football. I started at Ocean County Juvenile Detention Center as a counselor. And I've always watched the kids come in. I've counseled with a lot of kids. I've seen them leave the detention center, come back to the detention center, like a revolving door. And each time I'm asking them, what did you do different? Was your time in here helpful? What did you learn in here? And for the most part, a lot of the kids was like, no, because when I go back home, we're involved in the same stuff, regardless of what we learn, we can't get away from it. And then I started doing my research on it and looking at the different group homes. Different group homes were, not all, but most of them are pretty much the same. The kids come in, they send them to school, they counsel them at the place, and then when they reach a certain age, they discharge them or however they do it. But the kids wasn't growing. And that's why Restore came around. Restore is a mindset where you're taking something that's old and you're bringing it back to its glory. So with these kids, my mindset was make sure we get them in and work with them, get their education, teach them the network, give them a skill. You know, back in the day, like I said, we had the trade school. Being a country boy, we always had skills. If you didn't have the education, you know how to work with your hands. So one way or another, you could provide for yourself. And I think that's a big, with all the technology and everything, I think people just skips over it and assume that these kids are going to be ready because of technology. Yeah, they know how to do technology, but they can't come in the door and introduce themselves. You know, and yeah, they know technology, but if you take that technology away and say, okay, let me see you figure out this, they're lost. So, you know, that again, that's why the concept of it came about. And that's the direction that we're doing. We're looking to bring these young people back around to understanding the fundamentals of life, you know, education, hard work, commitment, you know, communication, lack of communication, you know, responsibility. And that's what, that's why, again, like I said, the concept of Restore came about.
That's why I love that title. Restore says it all.
Very appropriate.
Very appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Very.
And what was the second part with the football, with the Tri-State Warriors? With the Warriors, for me, you know, my brother Richard, he's gonna talk. I'm all about being the baddest team in the league. my whole concept and ever since I've been coaching in the league is we always got to be the best defense in the league, and that's the mindset while building long-lasting friendships and for lack of word, a community. Mm-hmm. You know, because And as we look at this, the ladies are paying, plus they're trying to maintain their own careers and stuff. So we're trying to build a community that while they're also playing for us, we're introducing them to different levels of networking. So it gives them opportunities to grow in the business world as well as on the football field.
Yeah, LB got a good point about being the baddest team out there. Him and I both have a bad taste in our mouth when our closest to a championship a few years ago was lost in triple overtime.
On the 1 yard line.
On the 1 yard line. that was our undefeated season. And we were 1 yard from the championship game. And that was our last year with that organization because we had a 5-year plan.
And what team was it against?
That was with the New York Sharks.
But who were you playing? Who ended up winning?
We were playing the Minnesota Vixen, and they went on the championship and they lost. But it's ironic because the Vixen and the Sharks were the first since that 67 to 70s league that was out there. They were the first two teams to play on a semi-professional level and be recorded and to be put into the record books about 25 years ago, maybe by now. They were the first two to play on a regular scrimmage game type thing. And that was our last game with that team. And the Sharks beat them back 25 years ago. And this is why it still bothers me today. You know, we won a lot of games, but you always remember the one that you don't. And that one hurts. But yeah, we want to give back to this league that has been very, very flourishing for our own growth as men, as coaches. And I feel like I have a duty to prepare these women for battle on the field and off the field.
Yeah, one more question. In terms of sponsors and partners, you know, obviously, you know, support is good from anybody. But from your values, from your philosophy and what the Tri-State Warriors will be in their community, what type of sponsors and partners are you looking for and what will they get out of collaborating with you?
Well, first and foremost, I was always told a long time ago, never turn away a volunteer. And you never turn away a sponsor or a donation. anybody that supports you. So we're looking for all levels of sponsorship to push this narrative higher. And, you know, we, as we look for exposure, we will give our sponsors and our support exposure also on all our platforms, all our media platforms, everything that we do. But we just want to have it to be like a existing community that expands all over Jersey. Yeah, we're based out of New Brunswick, but we call ourselves Tri-State because we feel that we will impact New York and Pennsylvania, or New York and Connecticut, which is really the Tri-State, but Pennsylvania is being involved too. So it probably doesn't really mean that it's just three states, but we really want to sustain this for a long time and allow these women to flourish with their communities, and their communities get the same thing back.
Me, I would say it's the concept that I'm looking at for them would be like the Green Bay team, where the town takes pride and ownership in that group. What they can be a part of, they can help form by joining us. And I think that's the mindset, you know. Make the Tri-State Warriors a household name, where in my house I'm taking ownership because that's partly my team, because I'm contributing and I'm helping do this. I'm at the fan appreciation night. I'm at the promotion of a game. That's the mindset. That's the feeling that I'm looking for, you know. I had a chance to go down to Green Bay one time. I passed that opportunity because it was too cold for me, but what I can tell you, when I got off the plane, people were there to meet me that didn't even know me. They just knew we were coming to try out. So they were there to meet all the tryout people. They followed us to the stadium. They were outside the stadium. It was like, yeah, we want to see what you're going to bring to our team. Not to the Packers, but to our team. So that's what I think, you know, I'm hoping that the sponsors and the supporters get from joining with us the bring this new product into this new football team, this new women's organization into light.
Absolutely.
That's a great idea and a way to promote, kind of keep that community groundswell, keep grassroots. That's a smart way to go, actually.
And if you look at Green Bay's stadium, there's never open seat in it.
That's right.
Not even in that cold.
Not 50 below, they still there.
They turn up, man.
Yeah.
And what's ironic is on that Green Bay concept, that's what Rutgers University is in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Especially in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. The community is entangled with them. They're right there. And so we want to connect on those shoulders too.
I just want to thank both of you, LB, Richard, for spending your time with us today, sharing your wisdom and sharing your vision. And believe it or not, the people that listen to the podcast are going to get some juice, if you will, some motivation and some energy from this. So we certainly would like to maintain contact with you and indeed have you visit us again.
Well, especially too, because you guys are teaching people how to empower themselves at a young age. And that's what Skillsharp is trying to do as well. So it's very aligned.
I love that term, Skillsharp. I might have to use that in one of my pregame speeches, LB.
Thank you for listening to Skillsharp, the podcast. Send your questions and comments to podcast@skill-sharp.com. You can follow us on Twitter @Skillsharp1 or visit us online at www.skill-sharp.com. This is Mike Daniels signing off for Todd Nakasone, Brian Wright, Alyssa Pruitt, Will Kelso, and the rest of the team at Skillsharp Studios. Until next time, stay sharp.